don't have it now, to get it in by Monday, I'll still be able to work it in. I should be able to have the test back to you and so forth by next Thursday. So, anybody else have a question? Anybody else? Alright. So, if you get it in by Monday, I think that's going to be much better than that. But I'd like you to go through them, you know, and be exposed to the problems even if you didn't get time in class. Realize there's lots of writing that's involved, so I'm finding that out when I'm trying to correct them.
Huh? I think I got exposed.
Okay, yeah. Oh, okay. Do you remember which ones you got didn't get done? Okay. If you don't, yeah, check with me on that, and I'll see. Anybody else not quite remember which ones they had? Okay, Daryl and Kate. All right. Maybe what I'll do is I'll take a look at the papers and write you a note and put it in the box tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, I'll try to take a look at the computer. No. Okay, good. Well, that's all I have for today, and I'll get the results to you probably next Thursday. Give you some more time to get humbled before the Lord.
Thank you.
Did you get that call about the heat spike? They left off yesterday, excuse me, on some Bible reading habits. And what I was trying to do here was just try and make some suggestions on personal reading habits that been suggested by others, things that I do, and you can add to them. But the main thing is to get into reading more personally, which is too easy a habit to get out of. I figure if I was having problems, others probably were too. And judging by a few hands yesterday, that we could all benefit from it a little bit. So what I've done is divide this into Old Testament and New Testament areas, and then just going through different translations, study Bibles, texts, commentators, just a few things, not anything real deep. And I left off on, see, I think I got through translations, didn't I, in study Bible?
Yes.
Okay. There was something I wanted to add on the translations that I neglected to mention. And one was, in the Old Testament, in the poetic books, this book of poetry from 26 translations. So it's all the poetic books, and it gives you all the translations right as you go along if they differ from each other. So it gives you all the differences. So at a glance, as you're reading through any of those books, you've got what all the various translations say. It'd be nice to have the whole Old Testament that way, but it is good for the poetic book, and that's the hardest part usually as far as translating goes. Also, I didn't mention Green's translation in his Interlinear is a pretty good translation too. It's pretty accurate. and Young, I think I mentioned, but just to reiterate, for punctuation and grammatical alternatives. So sometimes he does punctuate different and interprets the tenses a little different. And, okay, on number four, then the text, I left off of Ginsberg, right? So we're on the commentator. This is just a few commentators, for critical commentators. In the Old Testament, Colin Dillidge and Lang, Adam Clark for the versions. He gives the versions a lot of times if there's variants. And Hulse's Old Testament translation problems, which most of you know, but some of you may not be familiar with. Why don't you grab that? Next shelf up, I think. Yeah. That lists all the texts that are major texts, anyway, that have variants. And it's kind of like Metzger's commentary in the New Testament. He gives a rating, A, B, and C. And C being where there's more than one translation possible, so even just at a glance. What I had always planned to do, which I never have done yet because I haven't settled on one Bible, was if I ever got one, I'm waiting for them to come out with Green's and Linear or Zondervan's in all one volume, is go through and circle all the verses that Hulse discusses in the Old Testament that have variants, and do the same thing in the New Testament. That way you can still read through, and if it comes to a place where a variant might be important, you can always go back to a Bibliohebraic or a UBS text or something and check it out. Under number five here, suggested reading formats. These are just a few suggestions. You can make up your own, but just ways of reading. Some of these, a pastor I had got me involved in, and some of these others, different people, but they're all good, and this isn't inclusive at all. There's all kinds you can do, but like reading one proverb each day in a month, you through the whole book of Proverbs, one chapter. If you read five Psalms a day, in 30 days you're through the book of Psalms. One a day takes about 5 months. That's a lot. Reading Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles in a harmony. And somebody grab that. It's Crockett's harmony. Yeah, okay.
That's a handy
little tool. Gives you a harmony of Samuel.
Yeah.
Oh, it has it. In the other room, it's big. Oh, that's. Oh, okay. By Crockett, I think. Anyway. Then. Like Isaiah with the historical books, or the other prophets were applicable, where they tie in. Here's a good one. Ecclesiastes with Song of Solomon. For contrast. Also, Calvin's Harmony of the Pentateuch. Not too many people know that, but his commentary, which is this one they just come out with, but the other ones too, the Pentateuch is arranged in a harmony. So if you're studying them there, sometimes it's real handy because he's got it all laid out to where they harmonize. Those are just a few. That's the New Testament, though. Yeah, this is just in the Old Testament. Yeah, there's a bunch in the New Testament. That's a good one. Number six, what I found really handy is to keep a Bible atlas right with you while you're reading. And it's amazing how much you can learn about geography if you just have that handy. And also, it just it makes it a lot easier to see it visually as you read, too, if you can pick up any visual aid. And also, reading at least one custom book cover to cover The reason being that most of them are not, are designed to be read as a whole, and when you just go, just use them as research for particular passages, you never get the full impact. So there's a numerous that could be included there, just the ones that we use in the other classes, but we'll be using more of those in some of the assignments. And the survey and introduction books, which we're going to use a little bit too, like Introduction to the New and the Old Testament, Survey of the New and the Old Testament, for background material, which is one way to approach it. Like if you're going to read a book, say, you know, in the Old Testament, just scanning through a survey. Baxter's good, you know, good for that. It's mostly familiar with it. But there's a lot of others too, like books that are particularly like Introduction, like the Young to the Old Testament, Introduction to the Old Testament. The one that Greg Field's using this semester, I'm not sure which class he's using it, but the paperback on the counter out there, that it's a survey of all of the books of the Bible. And I'm not sure whether it goes into the New Testament or not, but it's pretty good. It needs to sign that as outside reading to the class and scroll along. Treasure of Scripture Knowledge and Nay's Topical Bible, which you're familiar with, but using and putting them to use, the more tools you can incorporate as you go along, the greater flexibility and speed that you can get. I know I used to go for years reading, and every time it came to a quotation or a reference, I'd never look it up because I never wanted to break the thought. Well, that's one kind of reading, but then another whole approach, if you go back, and it takes a lot longer, but you get more out of it usually. Okay, then in the New Testament, under translations, the number one here, the same translation you mentioned plus the concordant, which most of you are familiar with. And then there's this New Testament from 26 translations. So it's like having 26 Bibles in one, 26 translations in one. But this does, I don't know exactly, I'm not going to read all 26, but it does a tremendous amount of material for having it in one book. Again, number two for study Bibles, again, the Companion and Thompson Chain, Bollinger. His theology doesn't really come out that much in the Companion Bible. A lot of people shy away from that because Bollinger did it, but he was a brethren, and so they do. His cross-references are usually really good, and he usually doesn't get into theology in most areas. I mean, all it is the King James, but then he gives all of these word studies as you go along. So page for page, it's really a good investment for the amount of material that he gives. And you don't always have to be flipping to the back, although he has a tremendous amount of information and appendixes in the back that he does get into speculation in. But as you go along, it's one of the best reference works, I think. And then under text, number three, of course, UBS, which we're familiar with, but Nestle's and Concordant as well. Concordant has the value of Concordant text for Greek students is that it gives you the capital letters and it doesn't make, it doesn't divide the words, so it's as close as it was in the original that it can be, so it gives you, lets you decide where to put the punctuation and so forth. And it also gives you a look at what the problems were from a copyist standpoint, and helps you evaluate some of Metzger's comments a little bit and his commentary on the UBS as to why they chose certain readings, you know, for scribal reasons that he gives. Sometimes you look at the text and you know, no, Bruce, not this time. and four commentaries. The UBS does a series of commentaries, doing a series of commentaries, and in addition to Metzger's, which is on the text, behind over there, maybe you can grab some of those down to your, down at the end there. Yeah. Okay. They're starting to come out with a series that are very elaborate, exegetical, critical type commentaries. And I think that one's on Luke, isn't it? They've got one on Philippians. And so for a critical type commentary, they're really good. These are put out through the UBS, the same people put out the UBS text. I don't know if they give credit to the individual. I'm sure they probably do inside give credit to the individual scholars. But, then Zurich, which I don't have here, I have it at home, but it's a little like the covers are just like the UBS text. It's vinyl, only it's green. And it's a textual commentary as you go along. It would be more for a Greek student, but it's really good for just as a reading aid as you go along. And plus any critical commentaries. Now the reason I'm zeroing on the critical commentaries is because here you're not so much looking for interpretation to help with the text or anything. These are just aids to that. Okay, number five, on reading formats for the New Testament then. Harmonies of the Gospels, which we're all familiar with. Robertson, of course, and Robertson does give some good footnotes in the back of some of the problems of harmonies. But also, I don't know if it's Wieland or Wieland, W-I-E-L-A-N-D, that's Paulus' book there. And yeah, right there. That tan colored one right next to the left, yeah. We've got that in the other room too. It uses the RSV for a text, but it's a good harmony. It's got a lot of good footnotes that goes down if you go through it on the bottom. W-I-E-L-A-N-D. Also, Allen, A-L-A-N-D, Kurt Allen, which is on, he's on the UBS committee and did his own harmony on the Greek text, which I've had ordered for a long time. It's been back ordered, but for Greek students, it'd be the best, and it gives the UBS it gives Nestle's text and the Nestle's apparatus in the bottom in the harmony as you go. So it gives the whole harmony, plus it gives you all the variants as you go along too. And there's a couple others. There's one other right next to Allen's there, back on either side, or Wieland's there on either side. There's a Greek harmony. One is Stroud's there, and one is Wright, but they're older. But just for Greek students' benefit, there are a couple other harmonies on the Greek. And then Goodwin's Harmony of Acts with Pauline Epistles, with reading Pauline Epistles. It's a good way to read through, too, where it's keyed back to Acts. It's really kind of keeps a historical perspective a little bit. Is that? I'm going to see that. Anybody see that?
Approach is a good idea.
Okay, then just some, under five, just some suggested formats for reading. Reading all the books of one author, for example. Yeah, particularly in the Greek, for Greek students, because it gives you a real feel for the language as it's used by that author. You see a very radical difference when you go, say, from John's Gospel to the book of Hebrews. You think you change languages. One's in a, almost a classic style, book of Hebrews is, compared to the real simple style, simple but very complex theologically of John's works. Luke, for, you know, reading Acts with Luke, John's epistles with John, 2 Peter with Jude. In fact, a lot of commentaries give a harmony with Jude and 2 Peter. Not a lot, but there's a couple of them that do this to harmonize all of Jude and 2 Peter. And of course, well, you know, Apocalypse with Daniel and so forth, just looking at it with others. And keying the various books to each chapter of Apocalypse, something I started to do and never finished, but as you go along, keying all the prophets and the context of those books to each chapter of Apocalypse. It gets in to be quite a project. comparing James with Paul, like Galatians, say with the book of James for contrast. Going through all the Old Testament quotes in their context, which started to do that. I think one of the classes started to do some of them. And here's one I got into recently, was reading all the little parts of the back of Pauline epistles that everybody speeds through because, well, you're through the main doctrinal part, and now it's all the exhortations you've always heard, love your brother, and all the last few chapters of each of his, most of his epistles, he gives all these little practical suggestions. Get a strong dosage, you read the back of each one. And then six, using Atlas, Customs, Surveys, etc., as in the Old Testament. Also treasury, scripture knowledge, knaves, and so forth, same one. And Mark mentioned that under harmony of the gospel, they should have given that Christ, is that Christ in stereo, isn't it? Life of Christ in stereo. That's another harmony. Well, he takes a 4-year harmony, though, is the only problem. But, I mean, he does harmonize pretty well, most of it, and he does give some interesting footnotes. And there's one other idea that applies both to the Old and the New Testament, and that's speed reading. Not in the sense of the speed reading schools, but reading with not trying to digest the material, but especially since I've been through Bible college. Now, going back, say, reading, I was talking to one brother, completely reading the New Testament 3 times a week. Well, that seems like a tremendous chore, but if you're reading it really fast, you can go through and cover it really quick. And the purpose for it is now that you've got all the little details, is to just paint in more of the landscape, not zeroing in on anything. And this wouldn't be the only way you'd read, but I mean, just for a while, just to sit down and read through the whole thing and get a feel for the whole structure of the whole book, you know, either in the Old or the New Testament or the whole thing, but just getting through as much as you can in as short a period as you can, so you can keep all the pieces together. So it does have a value, and an easy translation would really help in that. The Living's good for that, not the Living. The Amplified is good for that. Living Dead. Okay, that's all I had on that section. Okay, does everybody have that file number? Is there any questions? Step on it.
Yeah. Kathy, you go to the book, a book or a chapter or something, the more the things that seemingly don't fit stick out too, is the faster you get through it. And when you get the whole context going, flowing, and all of a sudden, things that, depending on all of a sudden what that thing's doing there, really sticks out.
Yeah, you can't really speed read without getting stopping either. I mean, you know, you zero in, you can't help it. But I mean, going through, it's like I think with Don told about his brother when he went to speed reading school. The guy said he could speed read through anything, and his brother brought him Finney's Theology. You know, so you know, it gets to a point where sometimes it's, you know, useless, but for what you can retain, even if you could zip over the words, but just getting a feel for, you know, like particularly like say if you're reading Paul in harmony with Acts, although it's a little bit hard to follow in that book, but in some cases, but just speed reading through, you get a picture of Paul and the activity as an individual in life and the things that he did and where it was that you don't get otherwise, because you're looking at isolated epistles that have a doctrinal thrust, and you lose track of the overall impact that, you know, we're as an individual. It just ties more together. It ties it more together. The same way with the Gospels, you know, just. Have to read them in a harmony, but going through them, you can go through them real fast in a harmony, and you can get a whole feel for all of the flavor of the ministry that you couldn't get zeroing in on each little detail. Not that the detail isn't absolutely essential too, but it just too often, you know, we do one without the other. And that is a help, and it also helps to see themes more throughout the book, and helps to keep from getting trapped into little areas that taking scripture out of context. It helps you develop the context and a feeling for what, you know, the author intended. Is there anybody, if you have any other suggestions, you know, feel free to share forth that you found. Okay, then I'd like to take verse analysis, that handout, and do a couple assignments in class. In fact, take the rest of today. And rather than have me sit here and talk about it, I'd rather just jump in and start doing it. And then the questions, if I can answer any questions we go along, or somebody else, I would like to encourage you to ask each other too. I think one of the tools that we have here that is a lot of times overlooked for various reasons is each other. All these walking epistles walking around that in some cases know more than the commentators on the shelf on the subject, and to help each other, so particularly at a graduate level. So what I've done here is on this particular section, it's just basically just pass-fail. In other words, you'd have to do a really bad job for me to make you do it over. But I want to leave it that way on this particular assignment because, in fairness to the new students in this class, but also I want to get practice in doing it. And so I want to take and do two each in the Old Testament and the New Testament and run it through this outline. And this outline, I want to take just pretty much just like it is. I don't want, I saw some of them they did in Message 2. I want to point out a few misconceptions here. I don't want you just to duplicate the outline. You know, that's just wasted paper and wasted space. But don't repeat the whole outline and then fill in the information. Just take like a number one where it says observational analysis and a historical overview. You don't have to number them. You can just, as long as they're set off, you know, so you can, for your own. All I want to see is that you've got a workable format, basically, with including as much information as is applicable. So if you write the author and the date, the place of writing, you can do that all in one line. You know, you don't have to space it all out nice and neatly. You know, as long as you can read it, it's in one place. The occasion of writing, you may want to set these off so you can go back and see it. As long as you have something works for it, you don't have to spend time interpreting what your information is. So forth down through the list here, and then this, but this, where it says sources here, this is not part of the outline per se, but this is just to help you for various sources to check on this above information. So that there's, and the sources are general, they're right underneath each heading, and then the italicized numbers refer to additional sources in the back. So if the sources listed are general, they're right there, and then the additional sources are on italics in the back, two pages. And so you don't need to list those. I don't care about the sources, but, you know, unless you want to put it down where you get. That's a good idea if you're, you know, I mean, if you're using commentators particularly to make a separate page for each commentator. If you're on that section and list the commentators, go ahead, Ryan.
When you're going through this outline and working on it, sometimes you can get caught up in a study of just finding out the dates or something. Should you just think like the first date that you read in like an outline of that, outline of that book, an outline of the Hosea, give a certain date.
Well, no. At this point, it's just an overview. If the date is obscure and you've got a lot of different opinions, just put date obscure. Or there are possible range of dates, you know, within a certain period of years. And then if you go back, when you go back through it later, if the date might be a factor in some interpretive problem, then you would, you know, go back and zero in on it, maybe, you know, and see if you could pinpoint it, you know, whose reign it was, and wherever it might have to do with certain things that were going on that would be a hint to, you know, interpretation or something. But no, on the first part here, on the overview here of what we're talking about, it's just to gain familiarity with the text. That's the basic purpose. And so if the date is obscure, just say date obscure. Don't spend a lot of time on it. Or the place of writing. Any of this information. If there's disagreements, just put disagree or just give the possibilities. That's correct. But under the sources, now that in here you wouldn't list the sources except for your own benefit. If there's something you wanted to remember here where you saw, like say on the date, well, so-and-so was real dogmatic and seemed to have good proof on this, then you might, under the sources, you might list such and such a source for that particular, for date or something. That's the only reason you would list sources in the outline itself. If you're satisfied with the material you got, there's no reason to list sources. The only reason you're listed in the outline here is as an aid. Because we didn't have any other place, you know, to put it. We wanted to put it in as it went along. So is that clear? Is there any problems?
As far as the date of the change, I'm just wondering if there's an answer to the question.
You can get his dating system in terms of change. Or you can use these little, if it's for the books, you can use these little charts down here too. It may give a clue, use the title. That's not usually critical, but sometimes it's handy. Like if it's a psalm, say for David, did he write it when he's on the run, you know? Was it one of those psalms, or was it one after he was king? You know, was he being pursued by Saul? What was the situation? So it may be helpful, but in other cases, it may not have anything to do. Okay, and the textual and grammatical overview. The type of literature here, in other words, is it in the book of poetry? Is it historical? Is it one of the prophets? What what type? Because there are certain peculiarities in the different types of literature that you may want to look at later, and by identifying at this point, particularly after you're getting more familiarity with the language, you're going to look for certain things, like in Psalms, for example, and in poetic books in general, and in the Song of Solomon, too. You particularly find abbreviated language. In other words, they omit the direct article, sign for the direct object, which in Hebrew is. So you, they omit this, so you just, a lot of times the direct object is a little bit ambiguous if there's more than one direct object, or more than one possibility. But by knowing that, that's a literary device and not just, you know, the Holy Spirit necessarily just decided to omit that for a reason. There's got to be significance in that. It can save you a lot of trouble trying to figure out the significance of why that is omitted. And you find out that if it's so rarely used, that if it is used in the poetic books, it does have significance on the other hand. So whereas it's just the opposite in historical books. A commentator usually would pick those little details up, a critical commentator, but just little things like that you know. And also there's more of a chance of, because of this and other devices, there's much more of a chance of multiple meanings in the poetic books and in songs and things like that, and it's just a much more beautiful, from a Hebrew standpoint, form of language, that you can say things you couldn't say if you were doing it really precise. So they tend to abbreviate things also to make them fit in a certain meter within the text. And so, you know, God using all this to its fullest took advantage, you know, developed the language that way for a reason, I'm sure. But knowing these little devices sometimes is really helpful. So by identifying the type of literature after the purpose of source theory or something like that, but just, you know, being able to see some of the characteristics. And most of your introductions to the Old Testament, the New Testament, when they'll go into this in some detail, the different types of literature and the peculiarities of each and so forth. Varying degrees. Divisions and subdivisions, like in the Psalms, for example, there's different divisions in there. Where is it in the Psalms? And that, identifying the type of literature, but whereabouts is it in there? Is it a lake? This gets a little bit beyond what, unless you have some knowledge of Hebrew, but it also, like in a historical section, say, is it before or after the captivity? Because there were peculiarities in the language after the captivity that there weren't before the captivity. That doesn't have anything to do with any inspiration at all. It's just that the language of the people changed somewhat. So what God was using afterwards, if you knew some of the peculiarities, that they don't, you know, they don't, you can see what a liberal is saying and wade right through it because, well, you know, it's just a smokescreen in some cases because it, you know, that they jump on these bandwagons. Well, because the style is this way, you know, it's got to be some such and such a year. But then you find out that, you know, they wrote like that, used that same grammatical device way back in Pentateuch. So then, well, let's throw that guy out. But I mean, it sounds good. A lot of their arguments sound good to see how they're really constructed. But the more you know about the language and the structure, the easier it is to avoid a lot of those pitfalls. So that's what that's all about. Now in here, all I care about really is just being able to identify the type of literature which should be really. And then consulting an interlinear. The reason for that being to check, like in the Old Testament, just to check the accuracy of the translations to the literal. And what it says here, pointed and unpointed, and punctuation, the Hebrew in the original is unpointed and has no vowels. And so, again, this is more geared towards the person who has a little bit of knowledge of the language, but you can look at the possible possibilities by checking the interlinear, or checking, you can do this in conjunction with checking for variance, where the interlinear, let me back up a minute, the interlinear that we'd be using is the JPS text, so it has the asterisk. So if it gave you an asterisk and you saw a variant, then you jump down to the next step for variance. You could check for variance with Biblia Hebraica, which would give you the variance which green omits any of the readings, the variant readings. which are few anyway, but every time you see an asterisk over a word in the interlinear, does everybody know what the interlinear is, what we're talking about? That's the Old Testament interlinear. Jay Green is the author, or editor. That's a Jewish publication text, the same text that everybody uses except for Rotherham, and all the translators do. And so when there is an asterisk, there is a chance of a variant or an alternate reading, a curate for some reading. So you don't get what it is there, though, but you can go check another source. You don't have to go to Biblia Hebraica. You can go to Rotherham or NIV, and they would probably have it, too. So that would be another way you could do it. Or Kyle Village, or Adam Clark. But checking the interlinear, if you knew a little bit about pointing about the vowels, it'd be the first thing you'd check to just double check and make sure that there wasn't any problems there. Punctuation, likewise. How the various translators, where they put their commas may determine how you translate a particular phrase. And if you look at it in an interlinear, it bypasses that and you can make your own assumptions. In the New Testament, then, the capital versus the lowercase letters, the only one that would give you the capital letters would be the Concordant Greek text. And the UBS would give you the different possibilities for punctuation in the bottom and the apparatus in the bottom. If punctuation might be a problem. And the other reason for using interlinear is to parse all the words, number three there, to identify grammatically all the words. So to be able to identify, in most cases involves using either the analytical lexicon for the New Testament or the Old Testament. And sometimes if there's problems identifying there, there can be assumptions in a lot of cases, particularly in the Hebrew, but they're just about bound to the analytical lexicon unless you happen upon a commentator that will point out that there is more than one possibility unless you know the language. And even then, you're still bound to a lot of opinions in a lot of cases. Not so much a problem in the New Testament except with reference to whether it's a passive or middle voice, since you have the same forms. And some of them. So that's for those who know that Greek is something to watch for in the New Testament. And checking for variants. And then under sources here, these are, again, just key to the back. And also for extra-biblical sources, means commentators and New Testament introductions and so forth. Okay, then C on this first section then would be to identify interpretive problems. Now, up to this point, A and B is just the whole purpose of this is to identify, gain a broad overview, and then to identify any problems. Okay, and so C is to write down these problems, and nothing's going to have all six of these. But if there's a variant list, this is a problem. If there's a definition problem, a lexical problem, list that. Grammatical problem, list that. Historical, with regards to customs or the age, place of writing, that would be a historical problem. Or geography, where it was written, and so forth. Theological problems, the theology affects interpretation. Exegetical, there's a problem with understanding what's being said, being exegetical. But the purpose of this is to be able to identify what type of problem that we're dealing with. So this is the most important part, and I want to see what problems you're able to identify. That's the main thing I'm going to look for in this section, is identifying the problems. Because you can spend hours and hours of futile research if you haven't even identified the problems there. Okay, then once you've identified the problem, from this first page on, the rest of it is just working with that particular problem or problems. So you don't need to use this whole outline only as it refers to the particular problem that you have in interpretation. So if it's a textual problem, you you'd work on a textual outline, you would check, you know, using your sources, they're comparing, and then you'd checking the versions, the English versions, using principles of textual criticisms, so forth. I'll be, you know, here to help you with all of this, any part of it that you need help with, too. So, structural analysis, I want the Greek students to do a little bit of work on the structural part. All I want really is a simple diagram, just identifying the subject and the predicate. In other words, you can just take a line and divide it, the subject and predicate, and then any modifying clauses or words off of it. Okay, so that much should be pretty simple. I'll get with you on that a little bit, so you won't worry about it. That's just for the Greek students, or anybody. I don't think there's anybody in here knows who Greek is. Okay, then if there's anything else in here, lexical analysis, if there's a lexical problem, we go through this, and this is pretty detailed. We don't really need to go to this depth all the time. And grammatical, likewise, so forth. Then, I want to put these on the board real quick so you'll have them. You can substitute another one of these in either the Old and the New Testament if you've got one you particularly want to look at. Not one you've already done, though. Okay. Numbers 18:25, for an inheritance, the phrase. Okay, Deuteronomy 32:8, sons of Israel. These are particular phrases. Now, you're going to have to look more on the phrase to do it, but I'm just putting these phrases down because this is the part, the problem part that I want you to look at. Okay, this one, if you didn't do this, if you did this in an assignment, don't do it. It was an assignment in joke class, but at one time, but I don't think anybody is happy with their result. Job 19:25, the whole verse. Psalm 30, verse 3b, the last half of the verse. And Song of Solomon 6:12. Chariots of Abinadab. I won't write it out, but that phrase, chariots of Abinadab. And then Ezekiel 28:12. Thou sealest up the sum. The phrase, thou sealest up the sum. These are the phrases I'm giving you are the King James. So find it. Everybody got those, I hope. I want to get the New Testament. If you don't, get them after class in there. Okay. I don't know if anyone's run this through, but if you have, you know, spend your time with something else, but the only begotten God, the phrase only begotten God, I've tried to fix some juicy ones here. Romans 5:12, the phrase, for that all have sinned. For that all have sinned. Apocalypse 5:9. Looking at it now, remembering what Don taught on the chariot. If you don't know what he taught on the cherubim in Ezekiel, ask somebody who's taken it. 1 Timothy 4:10. The phrase, especially of those that believe. Especially of those that believe. 1 Peter 3:21, that whole verse. Although he may have treated that as wrong prejudice, but do it on your own if you haven't got that. But okay, so want to do pick one for sure that you want to do of each one, and one as an alternate, and then we're going to try and do two if we've got time to do two in each. We'll see how we do with the first one if we've got enough time, because I want to get into some other areas. And then after we do that, we're going to leave this outline behind, and we'll be in a new area where we're all going to do an outline together, and then there's five other areas that can be done simultaneously on different subjects, so we all won't be using the same reference material. Are there any questions on that? We'll all be in class, and there's not much other than pass-fail on this one we're doing right here. The rest of them will be a check, plus or minus, like they have, like it has been.